You know, the more we understand what these sharks are doing and how they behave naturally, and the more the public understands that, I think the more the public is going to see these animals in a different light.
From the Museum of Science in Boston, this is Pulsar, a podcast where we fish around to the answers to the toothiest questions we've ever gotten from our visitors. I'm your host, Eric, and I love sharks. When I was small, I really wanted to be a shark scientist. And it turns out that to be a shark scientist, you have to spend a lot of time on boats, which didn't really work that well for me, so I pivoted into other areas of science. But my guest today is Dr. Greg Skomel, and he has been a shark scientist for over three decades, studying sharks up close in every ocean in the world, and he's here to answer some of our best visitor questions about sharks. So Dr. Skomel, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Eric. It's great to be here.
So one of the top questions that I really wanted to talk about is, what can great white sharks tell us by their tags, by the tags that you put on them? We have our Heart of New England IMAX movie that we just had. It's brand new. It's produced here at the museum. And one of the scenes is you are tagging a great white shark off of Cape Cod. So what does that tag tell you? What kind of tech goes into a modern tag? Is it like an amazing computer and a tiny little thing you can fit on the fin?
Yeah, I mean, it's the tags we have nowadays, Eric, are absolutely amazing. They didn't exist, you know, just a couple of decades ago. And they do. They have microchips. They have satellite linkages. They even have camera systems built into it. So the type of tag we use is really tightly linked to the questions we're trying to answer. So we may be interested, for example, in where do white sharks go when they leave Cape Cod? So we use a satellite link tag. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I might be interested in how does a white shark behave every minute, every second of the day? And in those cases, I'm using a sophisticated sensor camera tag. So it really depends on the question, and we've used all kinds.
So it's not really like you go to the shark store and you get the most recent tag and the next one comes out, like the next PlayStation. It really is like custom to whatever question you're trying to answer.
Yeah. And I'm most interested in the behavior and movements of these animals in three-dimensional space of the ocean, right? So it really depends on scale. You know, do I want to know what they're doing year to year or second to second? And that's how we choose our technologies.
Now, do you have to retrieve the tags? I know sometimes half the battle or maybe more of that is to go and find the tag afterwards so you can download all that information. Does it send some signal back, or at this point is it all beaming back every time the shark comes up near the surface? It goes to a satellite and it comes right into your lab.
Well, you know, the tag we deploy during the film is a behavior tag. It's a camera tag, and we have to get it back. And the only way we can do that is we have satellite linkages built into the tag itself. So when it comes off the shark, and it's designed to detach from the shark after a couple of days, floats to the surface and starts transmitting to a satellite. And the satellite basically sends me an email saying, hey, I'm up over here, come get me. And then we go out there with a boat and we use, you know, a very high frequency sound transmitter to locate where the tag is exactly. And you would think, you know, you're putting a tag out on a randomly moving object like a big fish, you know, a giant white shark. And, you know, this thing can really swim, you know, 100 miles a day if it wanted to. And we've been really lucky. We've gotten the tag back. We've deployed these tags 29 times, and we've gotten them back 28 times. So we're almost perfect.
That's considering, like you said, you put it on a fish and it swims 100 miles, then you have to go find it on a boat in the ocean. That's a pretty good clip. I'd say I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good with it. And it's really exciting to use those tags because we can actually see what the shark is doing every second.
So that's recording video. Is it like first person video? Is it almost like what the shark is like? Do you see the nose in the front of the video?
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like you are riding the back of a great white shark when you look at these videos. And it really allows us to see how these animals behave, you know, over really fine scales. You know, we're getting a sense of what they do over broader time scales like year to year, but we're interested in what they're doing, you know, just routinely over the course of their day.
So what kind of questions are there in the behavior sector? Is it like what they're eating, or is it like how much time they're spending deeper versus shallower?
It's all those things, really. So what we're interested in specifically is we know they're coming really, really close to the Outer Cape, so our Cape Cod beaches. And so, as you can imagine, because they're great white sharks, people get nervous. And so what we're trying to understand is when are the sharks most likely to be there? And they're generally there to feed on seals. So how do they go about feeding on seals? What triggers that? Are there any particular environmental conditions? And so we really want to know, what they're doing every second so we can look for those patterns in behavior. And then we can advise the public as to where and when they should be in the water.
That's important, yeah, like you said, not just for science reasons, but for safety reasons to make people feel better about just being near these animals.
Yeah, I mean, we all have this perception that white sharks are out there to eat people. And of course, that's not true. It's the biggest myth about these animals. But mistakes do happen, and it doesn't take very many mistakes to really chill, the general public. And so, the more we understand what these sharks are doing and how they behave naturally, and the more the public understands that, I think the more the public is going to see these animals in a different light.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Now, you talked about how the sharks are off of Cape Cod, and this is not something that's been true for your whole career. Really, it's just in the last, what, few years that we've had this great white population not come to Cape Cod randomly, but return to Cape Cod. So can you talk about why all of a sudden the outer coast of Cape Cod is a great white shark hotspot?
Yeah, Eric, I mean, it's really a conservation success story, and it shows that if we do put regulations in place that will protect species, they will come back. But there are repercussions sometimes when they come back. And so, what we've done starting way back in 1972 is we protected marine mammals with the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and that included seals. And now, after over 50 years, and we like to think of it as happening over a short period of time, but it has been 5 decades, and seals have come back to Massachusetts and specifically Cape Cod. And that's what's drawing their top predator, which are great white sharks, back to our beaches. And as I said, there are potential, conflicts associated with that, but it is a conservation success story.
So when you're out trying to tag a great white shark, you don't know where they are yet because you don't have the tag on it. Are you following the seals? Is that where the sharks go? Are you kind of like just going out to those islands where there's 100 seals or 1,000 seals hanging around on the beach and then waiting offshore till you see a shark?
Well, that helps us. The seals absolutely help to put us in the area where the sharks are most likely to be. They are there to feed on the seals, but we cheat. We put a plane in the air, and you can see this segment in the film, and he goes and finds a shark for us, and we run the boat over there. And that's really primarily, along the Outer Cape where we do most of our research.
Yeah, that segment in the film of kind of chasing down and coordinating to get to the white shark. Because sometimes you think of tagging a great white shark as just one scientist on the front of the boat putting the tag on, or maybe being in the water in a cage, and you've got people on the boat, you've got airplanes, maybe more. So can you talk about how much of a team effort it is and the coordination that goes into that one moment of getting the tag on?
Yeah, I mean, people like to focus on there I am on the pulpit, I tag the fish. Oh my God, what a great job. But it's really a team effort. And I love the fact that you emphasize that. There's the plane in the air with Wayne Davis flying it. On the boat, we've got myself, the captain of the boat driving it. He's got to see where the shark is. I've got a staff on the boat and crew that are recording data as they come in. We videotape what the shark is doing. It's really a well-choreographed effort by a whole group of people. And it clicks. And when it clicks, you get what you see in the film.
That's what we've heard across all of science, is that nothing is an individual effort or two or three people in a lab or at a telescope. Everything seems to be a huge team coming together to try for. Sometimes this, it's not always just the one moment, but in your case, that moment of getting the tag on the shark and everybody, it's like when the Red Sox win the World Series, everybody's like, yes.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right. And not only, I mean, think also in terms of somebody had to design and build the tags. Someone designed and built the boat. I mean, the engines have to work. I mean, this goes all the way from the ground level all the way up to the very moment when that tag goes on the shark. And so it's the culmination of all those events really working. So it's a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck.
So you get all this data back constantly. Is it once the tag is on the shark, or maybe you have a couple, you're mostly back in the lab looking through that, watching the video. Is that what most of your job is? And then the tagging of the shark is only like 2 days a year. Like, how much of a balance is it between going out and doing that field work and then doing the research back in the lab to figure out what the data tells you?
What I love is the fact that, you know, what I do can change from day to day. You know, we have this tagging season that basically goes from June all the way into November, and we try to get out on the water, collect data. And then the rest of the year, we analyze those data to look for patterns and trends, to model what's going on, and ultimately publish those data and get it out to the public and explain to them what we're learning about these incredible fish. And at the same time, bring students on, mentor them, have them work on these data sets, get advanced degrees. So, you know, it's really exciting because it can change from day to day. And people say to me, wow, when you go back to the office, you must be bored. No, looking at the video, looking at the data, and seeing something brand new that no one's ever seen before, that is as exciting as standing on the pulpit of the boat.
Is there anything that's been like the most surprising thing you've ever seen from that first person shark footage, like something that no one expected, but then there it was?
Yeah, I think one of the best videos we got, and people are going to think it's somewhat boring, but we tend to think of white sharks as always moving, racing around, trying to eat seals, you know, trying to find other sharks to mate with, perhaps. You know, they seem to be hyperactive. But we've got this great footage of one of the sharks that's completely chill and relaxed and just swimming in the current and not going anywhere, almost like it's taking a break. And really just chilling out. And that to me, I think, is something we typically don't think about when we think about, you know, big charismatic megafauna like sharks.
That's awesome. Seeing animals behave unexpectedly when there really isn't a human around to interfere with their behavior, because we've been observing sharks for hundreds, thousands of years, but all we had was, what's the shark doing when I'm close enough to see it?
Yeah, exactly.
So being able to have this, what does a shark do when it's calm, when it's doing its own thing, when there's no humans, when there's no boats, when there's no camera clicks? I imagine that's just kind of invaluable.
Oh, I love it. And you know what? The new technologies are letting us do that, Eric. I mean, we can now observe behavior indirectly. You know, all too often, you know, when we, you know, throw ourselves on the scene and we want to observe what these animals are doing, whether on land or in the ocean, you know, and it's more difficult in the ocean, right? We're doing something to interrupt the natural behavior of that shark. And so by using the new technologies, the tags that tell us where these sharks are going and also what they're doing, you know, we're no longer placing ourselves in the equation. We can remove ourselves and see what these animals are doing. And I think it's really surprising, you know, what we're learning from these new technologies.
Yeah. And like you said, it keeps getting better. And I imagine it keeps getting smaller. If you wanted to do these things in 1994, you probably could have, but it would have been a tag that was really more like a backpack attached to the shark. It probably would have weighed 100 pounds. So,
and it was, you know, for tracking animals, land and sea, these were big, big instruments you couldn't put on, you know, a shark without really messing with its behavior. And so everything's getting smaller, from the batteries to the sensors to the linkages to satellites, you name it. And I can only imagine, you know, for those young people who are interested in marine science, maybe want to be shark biologists, imagine what it's going to be like. You know, we basically went from like a Model T up to a Corvette or a Porsche over the course of my career. Imagine what it's going to be like 10 or 15 or 20 years from now when these young students become marine scientists. You know, I'll probably be retired, but I'll be pretty excited watching it.
That's going to be really cool, because there's no reason to stop improving the tags and the technology, because we're never going to stop having questions.
Oh, that's right. You know, for every question I think I answer, I probably raise three or four more.
That's science. That's what we've heard again over and over again, is the best questions are the ones that you don't know you even have until you get out on the water and you're watching a shark and you're like, why is it doing that?
Yeah. It's every day is different for me, and I love it. You know, I love it. It's a great job, and I have to pinch myself every day realizing I actually have this as a job.
Is there a place that people can see some of this footage that's coming back from your tags, that's maybe like some of the highlights?
My agency, Division of Marine Fisheries, works very closely with a nonprofit called the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy. It's an incredible public-private partnership, and most of their social media platforms we'll showcase, you know, what we're doing, you know, video of us working as well as videos we generate from our tags and some of our findings. So I encourage folks to go to Atlantic White Shark Conservancy's social media pages as well as their website, and they could follow along and see what we're doing and even see some of the raw data we're collecting.
All right, to wrap up, thinking more about the future and what's coming up next for this upcoming season, what kind of questions do you have? What kind of new things are you looking for? What's your goal for the next year or two trying to understand sharks better?
Well, we're still, you know, really focused on this fine scale behavior, you know, but at the same time, we've got a number of questions we're still trying to answer. Like, for example, one of the biggest mysteries or great white sharks in the Atlantic and even elsewhere around the world is, you know, where do they reproduce? Where do males and females mate? You know, how long is the gestation period? And when does female give birth to her young and where? And so we're always putting out new kinds of tag technologies that'll tell us what these animals are doing over much broader timescales. But off the Cape, we'll also be focused on using these camera tags, using drone technology to actually observe what sharks are doing from far away. So again, we're not inserting ourselves into the scenario. And so using those technologies, we're going to hopefully get a better understanding of how these animals behave when they're close to shore, when they can overlap with humans. And of course, I'll be on the road, you know, promoting my new book, which is called Chasing Shadows, which is all about great white sharks.
All right, Dr. Skomel, thanks so much for telling us all about great white shark tags and the things we can learn from them.
Thanks, Eric. Great to be here.
To see Dr. Skomel in action, come to our IMAX theater and see the heart of New England and watch him tag a great white shark. And while you're home, visit mos.org/earthshot to hear about the ways we can study and protect sharks and other populations of plants and animals from the effects of climate change. Until next time, keep asking questions.